Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm Alex Sears and I'm at the De Winters Agency in central London, and the subject of today's session is acting in general and Stanislavski in particular. Joining me as an experienced guide through this rocky terrain is actor and teacher Bella Merlin, who has worked extensively in theatre, radio and television. She's been in a number of out-of-joint and national theatre productions, and she has taught acting in Britain and all over the world. In fact, she's about to take up a job as Professor of Acting at the University of California, Davis. Her books include a study of Stanislavski, as well as one called Beyond Stanislavski, and her latest is The Complete Stanislavski Toolkit, which was published last year by Nick Hearn. Welcome to Theatre Voice, Bella Merlin.
Thank you very much.
To start off, could you talk a bit about why you wrote The Complete Stanislavski Toolkit and what its title means?
Its title is what it says on the label, really. The idea of a toolkit actually came from a conversation that I'd had with its publisher, Nick Hearn, and he'd noticed that I was using the phrase quite a bit when we were talking about acting processes, and he said, well, how about writing a complete Stanislavski toolkit? And we liked the idea of toolkit because it was so accessible, so immediate, and often the imagery I use when I'm training young actors or working with experienced actors is, well, what do you need in this situation? Do you need a chisel? Do you need a hammer? Do you need a hacksaw? To make it as accessible and mysterious as possible. So I then went through all the collected works of Stanislavski in English and looked at the various terminologies that we used, and then in a semi-superficial way, and I'll explain why it's semi-superficial in a second, I then divided them up into what you might use in actor training scenarios, then what you might use in rehearsal situations, and then the tools that might be appropriate for performance practices. Semi-superficial in the sense that they are obviously interwoven. What you do in performance, of course, impacts on what you've done in training. But I just wanted to make it as easy as I could for a beginning actor, an experienced actor, and actually also directors.
And for people who don't act at all.
I've tried to make it a very fluent, easy to read kind of book, as if I was sitting there chatting to somebody, because it's not a terribly British thing to do, to write about acting processes. It tends to be much more a kind of European tradition, or an American tradition, actually. Certainly a Russian tradition. We're a little bit coyer as British actors about actually speaking about our process. And there are all sorts of reasons for that.
Yeah, why do you think that's so?
Often it can be that actors there's a sort of vague anxiety that if we talk about it, we'll diffuse it. I don't necessarily believe that, but I respect those actors who don't want to talk about their process. Also, we're not terribly good in this in our culture at celebrating our successes. So often the more mysterious or elusive it can seem that our performances are, the more modest we can be about it. Whereas perhaps the European tradition or the American tradition is not so coy about that. By actually taking performance processes and breaking them down very simply, I don't believe that, A, you completely demystify them in a bad way. Hmm. I think there's still mystery there, and it's whatever that unique thing, talent, stage presence.
Inspiration.
However, I also think that what I've done in the book is often use examples from my own performance, not to celebrate those performances, just to go, I know what it's like doing this. Many actor teachers aren't necessarily doing it. Many directors haven't necessarily had an actor training. So this is to kind of say, this might be a circumstance you find yourself in. From my humble experience, this might be a tactic or a strategy you
can use. A way out. And I think we'll return to that. But before we do, Stanislavski, why do you think he's so important?
I would suggest it's because he was the first person, and we're talking sort of turn of 19th into 20th centuries, who systematically analysed what an actor is doing. And he did it through looking at his own performance practice, and he did it through looking at the performances of those people he thoroughly respected and appreciated. And I think the joyous thing about Stanislavski is that he didn't think he was a very good actor. I think if he'd been a complete genius, he probably wouldn't have done any of this. He'd have naturally done it all. But he suffered acutely from stage fright. He often would feel he'd done very hammy performances. So he was very self-analytical.
And self-critical, of course.
And self-critical, yeah. He's also a very useful mixture of the director, the actor, the teacher, and the writer, and the amateur. And I mean that in the sense of genuine, he just loved performance processes, a lover of, an amateur of. And I'm not sure how many other theatre makers had been that unique combination of those particular skills. If he hadn't done it, I do believe somebody else would have done it eventually. Yeah. It just happened to be him at that time.
Could you say a bit about your own experiences? I think you travelled to Russia and studied his work there.
I had done a drama degree in this country, followed by a postgraduate degree course at a drama school. And I'd worked as a jobbing actor for about 3 years, predominantly theatre, some bits of telly. And I had actually become rather bored with my own processes. When you've only got 3.5 weeks rehearsal, or you've got no rehearsal for a bit of television, you're inevitably skimming the surface of your own craft. And I began to be rather bored with myself, actually. I thought, I'm sure there was more to me than this. And I really believed there was this kind of creative seam that I wasn't somehow mining. I then had the opportunity to go to Russia, where I did a 10-month actor training course there. And I came back a born-again actress.
And where exactly did you do the course?
I was at the State Institute of Cinematography in Moscow, which is the oldest film school where Eisenstein did all his early movies and that sort of thing. So there was a great sense of heritage and pioneering work in the air, which was great.
And what did you learn about Stanislavski in Russia?
Well, it quite shook my understanding of him, because I'd done Stanislavski at university. I was aware of his influence at the British Drama School, but I tended to think that the emphasis was either on textual analysis, units or bits of action, objectives, or on emotion memory, and I kind of thought it was one of those two things. What I discovered during my year training with Stanislavski oriented teachers was it was very anarchic, very playful, very improvisational, much more fun and much less dry and heady than I'd really known it to be. My main experience really, and I didn't know until I came back and started researching, was actually that we were learning a process called active analysis, whereby you never take the script onto the rehearsal room floor. Most of us, I'd suggest, are used to, you know, if we've got 3 weeks, well, days 1 to 5 might be spent, using that horrible word, blocking the play. Then we might run it a few times, etc. By about day 12, the director hopes we've not got the script in our hands anymore. But the whole process of active analysis is you never have the script there anyway. You, through a very simple process of you read a scene, you discuss a scene, you improvise a scene, starting with silence, going to simple words, going to more complex interactions, etc. Then discussing what you discovered in the improvisation and comparing it with what the scene is, you reach a point where after 3 or 4 weeks of rehearsal, you're dead letter perfect, having never had that piece of paper and ink between you and the other person or people that you're talking to.
And so this has got the advantage of being what, more immediate, more physical, what?
And you make more unexpected discoveries, because if right from day one you're eyeballing or in physical proximity or dialogue with the other actors playing the other characters, you suddenly discover all sorts of things about your character and what their motivations, their drives, their frustrations might be, that might take you weeks of discovery if all the time your eye line is sinking down to the page.
Or that you're sitting around a table and just talking about something.
Absolutely. And the brain process involved in reading a page is quite different from the physical process involved in dialoguing with somebody else, understanding what they want from you, understanding how you can give them what they need, etc. They're just two different brain processes.
And do you find it useful, or did you find it useful in those days to actually have the actor playing the other characters in front of your eyes, as you said? Because after all, they're no longer an abstract person, they actually embody in their movements as well.
Absolutely. And because it was an actor training course, therefore, you know, while we were also investigating scripts, we were also having movement classes, voice classes, etc., etc., then all that work that we were doing in the training classes was feeding into the kind of work we were doing in rehearsal-orientated classes. So we were understanding just how much information your body gives your imagination. And the whole system, the whole process, was what I then later, when I did the research, discovered Stanislavski called psychophysical.
Could you unpack that expression?
It sounds more scary than it really is, because it's psycho instantly here. You know, but it simply means your psychology, by which I would say that's imagination, emotions, intellect, and your body are absolutely mutual partners in discovering what's going on in a human situation. So, yes, of course you can do your text-led analysis, and I still do, but that will only give you one part of the jigsaw. If actually you're putting two actors physically in a space where they can see each other's faces, see each other's bodies, understand the energy and the silent communication that's going on, that psychological work, which I really mean, that physical work, by which I also mean energy, silent communication, is feeding into your imagination as much as any text-based work will do.
So you don't just have an intellectual understanding, you have both a physical and an emotional and a psychological understanding simultaneously.
Simultaneously, and that's the important word. It's all happening at the same time.
In the Stanislavski toolkit, you quote Stanislavski on several occasions, as well as using examples from your own work. Could you talk a bit about the new translation of Stanislavski's work by Jean Benedetti? Was that useful to you?
Incredibly useful. Most of us are probably aware of an actor prepares and building a character, and maybe even the third in the trilogy, creating a role, which came into the English-speaking world in the 1930s onwards. So nearly 100 years ago, through American translation, times have changed, politics have changed, the way people sort of talk about these processes have changed. That's not to say that what's in the new translation is anything created. It's just a fresh look. And actually, it's also a new examination of what those terms really mean. I'll give a couple of quick examples, which I found really useful. In An Actor Prepares, there's a chapter called Inner Motive Forces. Well, crikey, that sounds sort of sci-fi, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you have to kind of think, what on earth does that mean, inner motive forces? It's very simple. It means what your head is giving you, what your emotions are giving you, what your body is giving you. It's those three centres. The new translation calls them psychological inner drives. Still quite a big mouthful, but it's much more obvious.
Yeah, and drive is more dynamic, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's actually what they were originally called. So what the 1930s translations did was sometimes use terminology that was a little bit more scientific.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking the age of Freud and Jung, you know, the science of emotions was very current then. Another of my favourites that's been changed is what we've all probably known as units of action. When you take a scene and you break it down into its sort of beads on the necklace, if you like. These have now been called bits of action, and that's the original word. The Russian word was bit.
And that makes sense because it's breaking something that's a whole down into pieces or bits. Yeah.
Absolutely. And whereas unit can make something sound very equal, one yeah. bit is
oh,
a sphere.
Oh, yes, a unit of measurement.
Yeah, yeah. a measurement. Mm-hmm. Bit allows for something to be 3 lines, 25 lines, 2 pages, a paragraph, whatever. It allows for a bit more rhythmical irregularity, which mm-hmm. I think is useful. Mm-hmm.
And I remember you saying about Stanislavski that he does have a kind of almost spiritual side, a kind of religious side, as well as his more practical or modern psychoanalytical side. Can you say something about that?
Because he was working in Soviet Russia, so a lot of this had to be censored. Mm. So we don't know huge amounts about what was going on. However, it would appear that in the satellite studios surrounding the Moscow Art Theatre per se, a lot of yoga and yogic practices were going on. We don't tend to think of that tall man with a big moustache doing his welcoming the sun and all that sort of stuff. But this is really exciting because I think most actors would say that, you know, some kind of exercise that involves stretching, breathing, loosening up, etc., is a very useful thing to do before getting on with a show. And he certainly did use the word spiritual or soul quite a lot. Now, this is where I'm going to start to be quite contentious, if that's all right, in that the new translations have often translated what is in the Russian as spirit or soul as mind.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I find this quite curious, because the implication is that a 21st century audience wouldn't like the idea of spiritual, you know, we've got enough problem with religion in our current society. Mm. I'm not so sure that's true. Mm. When I'm involved in workshops with professional actors or students, there is no coyness about using spiritual. Mm. At the moment I'm researching a new book called Acting the Basics, and it's leading me to read pretty much anything I can get hold of, and particularly a lot of what's available in America, where there is no problem with talking about the spirituality of acting at all. And I think we're quite clear when we talk about it, we don't mean anything religious. We mean something other than the three dimensions that's going on all the time between people.
And mind tends to be a very intellectual word rather than that sense of being and wellness and so on. Can I ask you, what did you get? How did your experiences in Russia change your ideas about acting and training?
I was very lucky in that my experience of the Russian training was incredibly integrated. The vocabulary that was being used in a voice class was the same as a ballet class, was the same as a tap class, the same as an acting class, the same as a movement class. They all used this, because they were all steeped in Stanislavski. A tap dancing teacher would be talking about connection with the ground and the uplifting of the soul and all this sort of thing in a way that I hadn't really known about in my British training. So I saw the whole disciplines, all the disciplines of acting and performing, as all part of one holistic system, which was about communicating with an audience. That's how it impacted on my kind of understanding of acting as a profession. For me personally, in terms of where I place myself in the industry, that radically changed. I think by necessity, as a young actor leaving drama school, you have to have a certain thrust, ambition, competition. It's kind of what's going to keep you alive in the industry initially. Ultimately, I'm not sure how much it serves the higher purpose of the acting craft. And I came back from Russia no longer concerned about the results. My process became the most important thing, and this was impressed upon us all the time. If your process is correct, you will get the result. And that's why I think I'd become bored with my acting before I went there. It was so result orientated. How to find the walk, how to find the voice, how to find the da-da-da-da. Before I let it emerge almost like a negative into a photograph and seeing what the image was.